You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 30th, 2017. This is episode 200 and what was it? 244. I'm good at remembering things.
You're great at remembering things, Rob.
That's Jason.
I'm
remembered
Jason.
That.
Surprisingly.
It's tough. Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
I'm fantabulous.
Good. Did you play any games lately? What's new with you? How's the world if Jason?
Did I play any games lately? Nothing really new.
No?
Nothing really new. Haven't had a lot of time to play games. Just catching up on some other stuff.
Talking to the microphone, please.
Catching up on some other stuff. Nobody cares.
I care.
I know you care. That's why I don't care. Not a lot.
Okay.
So you know what game I want to try? Star Wars Clue. Have you seen that?
I've seen Clue.
So Star Wars Clue is 3D.
Okay.
And it's the Death Star.
Okay.
And you're trying to get the key card so you can get away.
Oh.
And Darth Vader's trying to murder you, I think. I mean, I'm sure there's a nice way to say that, but sure that's what's happening.
Yeah, and you're trying to find the key card?
You're trying to find three things you need to get out, right? So maybe like a key card, a weapon, and something else, and that's how you get out or something like that. I don't know. It's a 3D Death Star that's like cardboard and sits on your table.
I
was sold at that.
That sounds neat. Yeah, cool. I played a game. I played Blood Rage.
Blood Rage.
We had a game night a few weeks ago, and some friends came over, and they brought Blood Rage.
Kingdom Blood Rage. No.
I mean,
Kingdom Death Blood Rage.
I can see why you would think that, because it's a minis game, and there's some big monsters in it.
Blood Rage or Blood Bowl?
Blood Rage.
Okay.
So a cool mini or not game. It was a Kickstarter, I don't know, a year or so ago. Eric Lang designed it. Yeah. It's a Viking game. You're Vikings and you're conquering different parts of the world, and Yggdrasil's the tree or whatever is in the center, and it's played over three rounds. Each round ends in Ragnarok, and if your warriors die in Ragnarok, you get points for that. Or you maybe get points for that, and then at the end of that age or whatever, all your warriors that went to Valhalla are resurrected and go back into your pool. Your action points are rage points, so every action you take is based on how angry you are, basically, which is kind of a cool idea. I mean, it's their action points, but it's, thematically speaking, that's how it's connected in there. First of all, I want to say I lost. I did very poorly in the game, but I still did. I did not get last place.
Okay.
I did not get second place. I would say that I got between second and fourth place.
So fifth place was a joke.
Yeah. But I did well. I did well for having played it for the first time, I think. But I did as well as I did, not by conquering territories, but by having my warriors die glorious deaths, which was kind of a cool thing. If I had been a better player, I might have actually been a contender playing it that way, which was pretty cool.
So you think it was a good game?
I liked it very much. I'd be happy to play it again.
Eric Lang pretty much just designed
it. I mean, that dude's a genius, right? Yeah, so I think it's expensive. I want to say it's like $100, so I would never buy it for myself. You know, but it was pretty cool, and the minis are beautiful. Hey, cool mini or not, makes nice looking minis.
Shocker.
You know, and it's not like a tactical combat game. You know, you just put it. Every territory can hold so many armies, and each mini represents an army. For example,
so it's Risk.
It's not as complicated as well. In some ways, it's much more complicated than Risk, but in other ways, it's a lot less tactical.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not really a one-to-one comparison there.
That's just what came to mind when you said territories and armies.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But anyway, I liked it a lot. It was a lot of fun. Actually pretty easy to learn and pretty easy to get into. It's every round starts with drafting, which, you know, I'm bad at drafting. So bad at drafting. So that right from the beginning, I was basically set up for failure. But Christine, who played it for the first time, and the other couple brought it over, they had played a couple of times, two player. Christine, having never played it before, just stomped everybody.
That's hilarious.
It was amazing. She has an NBGPA, man. For builders who don't know, that's natural board game playing ability.
Yes.
Yeah. She's got it, and I don't know how it just clicked for her immediately. So, yeah, it was super fun. I liked it a lot. Blood Rage. We also, that night, did a playtest of Eight Arms to Hold You, and that went really well. A lot of good feedback on that, and I think I talked a little bit last week about, you know, trying to get it tuned for that, what's looking like a 3 to 5 player range.
Right.
That was good work to do, and there's more testing to be done on that. I wanted to get As Autumn Leaves to the table, but didn't quite work out that way. We ran out of time.
Nice.
But
that sucks.
Yeah. So next time. But good news. I got Tausch Rausch.
How'd you get Tausch Rausch?
I bought it from the internet.
How much was it?
It was like $35.
How much shipping?
That was included shipping.
Wow.
All in, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was on sale on Amazon. I didn't even have to go to Amazon DE. It was just on, I found it on Amazon. Found it for it was like 35. Yeah, I think it was about $35. And I had an Amazon gift card that I hadn't used yet. And I was like, yes.
Next time we get together, we should really play that.
Yeah. I tried to play it the other night and looked at the German rules and stopped looking at that. And then I looked at the translation that our friend Chris Kopak put on Board Game Geek.
Uh-huh.
And there's a few typos in there. So I need to get with Chris and have him clarify that.
Okay.
Because it's not super precise. So okay.
Yeah, obviously he didn't translate it, but yeah, knows right. How to play that game super well.
Yeah.
Love that game.
Yeah. So anyway, so Tausch Rausch, very excited about that.
That's cool.
And what else? I think that's about all that I've been doing on the gaming front in the last couple of weeks.
Excellent. So another thing lately that I want to talk about real quick before we go into the topic. So like 6+ years ago,
2008, you and I, wasn't it 2008?
2010.
Was it
2008 was when I made Coffee Shop Kings.
Oh, that one. Okay.
2009 was Hobocon. And
right,
2010, we shot a movie called Atrophy.
Atrophy.
It's a steampunk action-adventure film, best described as Mad Max meets The Wizard of Oz meets steampunk, is the best way I can think to describe it.
That is an accurate description, I think.
It's a real fun movie. So simple setup for this movie, right, is this guy named Matt. He's an engineer. He comes home one night. He gets home late from work. His wife and him have a strained relationship. They have an argument. He retreats to the basement, has a couple drinks, falls asleep. Wakes up the next morning, goes up the stairs to find, oh my gosh, my house is gone. Mm. I am in the woods in the middle of nowhere. Right?
Tragic.
And that looks actually really cool. Very impressed at how cool that looks. anyways, so what ends up happening is he wants to find his way home, right? And he has to deal with the people in this new world that he's in and figure out what's happening.
Mm.
And there's some steampunk stuff involved. And darn it, I'm really proud of how it's turned out, actually.
Yeah.
So, and the reason I'm telling you this, the movie's not out yet. We're getting there. We're getting really, really close. And I've been saying that for 6 years. But we're close enough now that the movie's about 99% done. We have a trailer now.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. And the trailer looks really good. I feel really good about it. Yeah. So,
pretty good.
Anyways, so I'm telling you this so that you can watch the trailer. So go to buildingthegamepodcast.com, look at the show notes for this show. I will put a link to the trailer in there. I may, if I remember, even put it on our Facebook page.
Whoa. So,
yes. In fact, I will do my best to do that. So if you check there and don't see it, yell at me and I will do that right away because it will take 10 seconds.
Yeah. 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 A lot of builders don't know before we were in this board gaming nonsense. Jason was a movie maker.
It is true.
Yeah. So it's cool to see that project finally getting somewhere.
Yes, me too. It's been very frustrating.
Yeah.
Basically what happened was we said, let's make an action adventure blockbuster for less than $10,000. That was my goal. Uh-huh. Can we do that? Right. And And we did that. It's just post-production took a dang long time. We did most things practical, but then some things didn't work out practical like we wanted them to. So we had to do some CG work afterwards. And really the biggest problem was sound effects. It took a very long time to get figured out, and we had some sound problems. And now I'm happy to say that those are pretty much all cured. And it's now working really well. So
cool.
Yeah. So we will keep you guys informed too, as when the film comes out. I have tweeted about it, so some builders may have seen the link, but by all means, check it out. I'd love as many people to watch it as possible. And, yeah, we'll keep you guys updated as it moves along. So,
yeah, right on. Good stuff.
Good stuff. So, Rob has a topic he wants to talk about.
Sure. We were looking back at old show stuff from earlier in our history and thinking about old topics that we might come back to. Stuff that we may have learned about or might have fresh perspectives on after so much time. And one that jumped out at me was combat mechanics.
Yes.
Which I think we talked about this in our first 15 or 20 episodes. I don't remember the exact
episode number. Grazed on the topic, yeah, right. You know, after that.
I think this was the topic that originally spawned the battle box idea, which you remember the battle box?
I do. Oh, it was basically Boggle, but it was it was fighting.
Right. And where the cubes, it wouldn't be cubes, or it wouldn't be dice, it'd be cubes. I mean, right. It could be dice, but the main idea is cubes, and whatever slots the cubes fell into would assign, there'd be some kind of a printed grid or something underneath that. That would say, depending on where those cubes land, how the battle played out.
I still think that's cool.
I think that's cool too, but just component wise, it's just crazy.
The idea that I put my cubes in, you put your cubes in, and then we shake it around and see what happens. Mm-hmm. That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. I love the idea still, but I don't think it's practical to actually create unless one of us gets 3D printer.
Right.
Get it, Jason. You should get a 3D printer.
No.
We need a friend locally who has a 3D printer.
Someone get on that.
Yeah. Anyway. So, combat mechanics, I thought it'd be interesting to come back to and kind of talk through. Now, you and I have both played a whole lot more games since then and experienced a lot, just a much, much bigger variety of stuff and ways to approach conflict and combat in games. I don't know. Do you have thoughts to start us off here?
Well, I think the first thing, you know, that's easy to go to with combat mechanics are, mm-hmm. You have to ask yourself some questions. How real do you want it to be? How tactical do you want it to be, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to have miniatures moving around on a board? And you could do that with area control, what you talked about with Blood Rage, right?
Yep.
You could do that with hexes, squares, you know, really literally granular tactical level where you're moving miniatures around and doing things with ranges and stuff. And but the easiest way to do that for resolution is simple. It's rolling dice.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
Tried and true works for D&D, works for a heck of a lot of things. Works for a lot of games. Rolling dice adds that bit of randomness that makes it sexy. Right.
Yeah.
So there's your easy low hanging fruit answer.
Sure. Right. Yeah. So the way Blood Rage handles combat, your standard units each have an attack power of one. Your leader or your chieftain, whatever his name is, miniature has an attack value of 3. And then you can also get elite units or monsters that you can summon to fight for your army. And they might have a power of, you know, between 2 and 4, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you look at who's in that territory when the battle commences, and you just add up the total. And whoever has the highest value would be the winner,
right?
All things being equal. But then players can choose a card from their hand with an attack power, and then you put it out face down, and at the same time you reveal. And then that's a way to affect the outcome.
Nice.
You know, so it's, you're making a deliberate choice. And I liked that very much about Blood Rage, because like I said, I earned most of my points by having my warriors die valiantly in battle, right. You know? And so when I would put that card out there, and I would deliberately pick a card that was worth 0 attack. In fact, I had one that I was able to keep using that had 0 attack, and if I then lose the battle, I get to steal some of the victory points from the other guy.
Nice.
From him winning that battle, right? So, and that was really satisfying. Another cool thing that game does then is that the winner of the battle loses the card that they played, but the loser gets to keep the card they just played.
Nice.
So by psyching somebody out like that, you can get them to forfeit a really high value card. It's super smart. Hey, Eric Lang, right. Smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, smart guy. Smart combat in that.
So
very simple and very approachable, but still leaving room for strategy and decisions.
Right. And so that makes me think of another combat resolution thing that I think is really cool in board games. D&D minis that I used to play, you actually had to track hit points, right? Oh, you did 5 damage. I lose 5 damage. Yeah. I had to use a marker or track it, or tokens or whatever. I hate that. Mm-hmm. So another clean way that it's done is you've got the who has the higher attack, right?
Yeah.
I did that in Gunslinger Ramblers too. Well, yep. No, originally, but then that changed. But yeah. I mean, but I like that, right?
It's
clean. It's easy. My number's higher than yours. I win. Yay.
Yeah.
Another way to do it is with attack defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, or in the idea being that when I attack you in one turn, well, so there's two ways. If I attack you and we beat your defense, then you're toast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you that's the difference between defense and hit points, right? If it's hit points, you're going to lose those possibly over the turn. Or maybe it's hit points, but the idea being that in one turn, I either overcome that
mm-hmm.
or I don't.
Yeah.
And if I don't, it's as if I never attacked, right? Like if I attack you for 7 and your defense is 8, then no harm, no foul.
Sure.
You still have 8 next turn, right?
Yeah.
And I've wasted my attack.
Yeah.
What's really nice about that for board games is no tracking, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
It happened or it didn't happen.
Yeah. Small World, I love the way Small World does it. It's just how much cardboard is on the table or in that space, you know? Do I have more cardboard tiles than you? If we have the same amount, then it's a tie. Nobody goes anywhere. If I have more than you, then I win, you lose.
So that's simple.
Yeah.
So that doesn't take into account then, does that use a pricing model where they're all the same?
Well, so there are a lot of factors in that. Then Small World also, though, encourages you to burn out your entire army as fast as possible, right?
Okay, right. You know? So you can get a new one.
Right. So when you're out of units, you're just out of units, and well, then I'm going to put that race in decline, right? I'm just going to ditch that entire species, and I'm going to build an army out of a different species that way, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so the structure of that game encourages you to just go for broke and just make everything as big as, you know, stomp over people as quickly as you can and as sweepingly as you can, right?
Right.
Yeah. But when you do that, when you just dump everybody in one spot and go for it, you know, if you lose some guys or if you put all your eggs in one basket, you're not gonna be able to defend the other territories that you were trying to hold and so on and so forth. That's another way. It's just who has more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The game I'm going to pitch today, I kind of have an alternate approach to combat that I came up with, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, but I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here. Sorry, go ahead.
So other forms of combat resolution, you can, you know, you said with Blood Rage, you would flip a card over to augment things, but you literally can just flip a card over, right? War style. Higher card wins, tie does something else. You know, and you can have other factors in place that would allow certain things to happen, win or lose. You know, I mean, really trick taking, right? That's what trick taking is. It's resolving combat
in a way,
the high card resolving it.
Yeah.
And a trump card being like a special attack that wins the day.
Yeah. What... When you're thinking about a combat system for a game, what are the important pieces that we should be thinking about in that effort?
I think the first thing as a designer you want to think about is the complexity, right?
Yeah.
Do I want this to be a complex system that involves movement and other things? You know, do I want this to be another example I can think of would water balloon washout, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That in that game, you hit someone once and they're wet. You hit them again and they're washed, they're soaked, and you hit them again and they're washed out, right?
Yeah.
So damage is tracked over time, as in you flip the card over. If I get soaked, you flip it over, I'm on the soaked side, hit me again and I'm out. But I could heal by drying off and flipping over, right?
Yeah.
But the thing with that is there's no targeting system, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
When I throw a water balloon at you, I hit you. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And that is, so that's another thing to think about when you're thinking about simplicity. Do I want to roll to hit? Which kind of is what you're doing. I mean, rolling to hit is not much different than rolling and comparing whoever gets the higher wins.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that, or rolling attack versus defense. You know, I think personally, I think in a card game, the dice, the system should either be roll a couple dice or the cards resolve the things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. So complexity. Complexity is a big piece there. The more complex the game, the combat is, probably the more tied to strategy it should be.
Exactly.
Right? The more it should be tied to the structure of the army that you're building or the units you're using for combat. Or maybe to think of another way, like in terms of D&D combat can be very complex, but it's because you're invested in the character, you know?
Right.
So the complexity of the combat should be tied to how invested you are in the units that are involved in that combat. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas simple combat, okay, then the next thing is that should combat be the focus of the game? If combat should be the focus of the game, then complex combat's probably a good idea.
Or at least moderately complex, right?
Yeah, right.
More than one reveal a card, right? Otherwise, you've got war, right?
Yeah, right. But if you don't want it to be the entire focus of the game, if you want it to be one of several features of the game, maybe it shouldn't be super complicated.
Right, you should make it as simple as possible then.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think that is kind of an important rule to follow, right? Because when you make that, or really anything, too complex that is not the main focus of the game, mm-hmm. it's distracting from the main focus of the game.
Right? Yeah, right. Because you want people to play the game you made, not play a small piece of the game that you made. Right. Yeah.
You know, really, you can say combat resolution, but really you could replace that with conflict resolution general, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think the lessons here go beyond combat, right?
For sure. Right.
Really to just how are you resolving conflict in a game?
Yeah.
And how easy or complex that is, we both agree, should be how central is it, right?
Yeah.
If it's core to the game, like if you kind of have two lines, right? the more complex it should be, the more to the core of the center of the game it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the less core to the game it is, the simpler it should be.
Yeah.
So as not to distract and also not to confuse, right? Your players can only learn so many rules, especially if you're looking to do a game that's easy to get into, right?
But yeah, very approachable. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, Yeah, combat. I don't play, we've talked about this before, I'm sure. I don't play a lot of games with direct combat like that.
Right.
That's not the stuff that I gravitate towards. But when I play them, if they're well designed, I enjoy them very much.
Right.
You know, I would never have chosen to play Blood Rage on my own because it's not a game that attracts me.
But it was fun.
Boy, was it fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have more thoughts on combat?
No, I feel like that is a pretty good summarization of it and how, you know, some choices you should make it as a designer. If you've got any other ideas, we'd love to hear those.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Eric Lang, if you're listening, I know you're a big avid fan of the podcast.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Every week. I mean, he said he learns a lot from this show, so that's not true.
Not true at all.
But anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'll move on to pitch a game because we want to make sure we save some time for a couple of voicemails on this episode.
I've got those ready when you're done. So
I'm going to pitch a game. So you know that I occasionally like to think about solo games.
You do?
Yeah. So
Snowplows.
Snowplows.
Emergency rooms.
Right. So I'm thinking about this solo game idea again. So this is a new idea. So I don't have a name for it.
Solo Mio.
Nope.
Done.
That's actually a funny name and might be a good name for a solo game, but
not this one.
Wouldn't work for this one. Yeah.
Solo Mio.
Oh, Solo Mio. So this game is in this game, the player is a dragon and you're a dragon and you are a young dragon at the start of the game. And you have your entire life ahead of you and you have 60 years. You have 60 years in the game,
okay,
to amass a hoard, all right? You want to amass a hoard of gold, and you're starting out with just a small pile of gold that you sleep on at night. And you are going to amass that fortune by raiding villages across the countryside. Every time you raid a village or you know, if you're going to go for it, you might attack a castle. You know, and by doing that, you're going to be getting gold from these locations. Occasionally, though, if you anger the population too much, it might mean that a knight will seek you out and seek to slay you.
Always bad news.
Right. So the game is based on action points. And you start the game with 60 action points. Each action point is 1 year.
You don't mean rage points?
I don't mean it, rage points. Okay, I mean action. So every action point basically is 1 year of the dragon's life.
Okay.
Okay. And as you take actions throughout the game, you're gonna be spending those action points. And it just kind of reflects how much time it's going to take, how much energy this dragon puts into what it's doing. The way you track your action points is that you have on a player board in front of you, you have a scale from 1 to 10. And then at the start of the game, you take a D6 and you put it on position 10 on that scale on side 6.
Yep.
And every time you take an action point, you slide that die down the track until you get to the bottom of the track, and then you flip it to side number 5. And
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
actually.
Just simple tracking of action points. And the game ends either when you use your final action point or when you die.
Fair enough.
Okay. Now,
whichever comes sooner,
right. Now, the next thing about this is that the dragon measures his life by the size of his hoard.
In love? Oh, no. Sorry. No. Seasons of love? No.
For a dragon, gold is love. Gold is life. So you don't have a separate life bar from your hoard.
Okay.
Okay. You have another track. That is much the same way, but it starts at 10 points. So you put the 1 on the 10, and that's the size of your dragon horde right now. And that is the same thing as hit points. So every time you take an attack, and every time somebody hits you, that you're losing gold as you're losing life. Okay. And thematically, I'm thinking that, you know, while you're away spending time raiding this village, somebody snuck in and stolen some of your gold.
Right.
You know, just a simple thematic justification for that. You're going to be able to get cards during the game. The cards will let you do things like upgrade your attack ability and your attack effectiveness to allow you to augment the results of raiding a village or something like that. This whole pitch is still kind of loose. I'm still just exploring the idea right now.
Okay.
You know, but I liked that idea of you can never get more action points, period. Your life is your life, and that's how long you're going to live.
Okay.
Okay. And maybe it's not 60 years. Maybe it's 600 years, and every action point is 100 years, or not, is 10 years. That's math, right? I don't know. Whatever. So the core of the game then is. And then occasionally you're going to flip over some kind of an event card or something. Where there will be some kind of an effect. Maybe another dragon attacks you, or maybe there's a shortage of sheep. There's a famine and you can't eat sheep and you're starving this year or whatever. Okay. Things that you have to overcome, right? Challenges.
Right.
But so then the core of the game actually will be kind of this combat situation where you go and raid a village. Now your dragon is going to have, and this is where I'm getting a little fuzzy, but I have some goals that I want to achieve with the combat in this game. When you attack a village, your dragon is going to have some kind of an attack value, and the attack value is not a number. The attack value is basically dice faces of dice. Okay.
Okay.
So, and I'm thinking about using just like standard fate dice, you know, a standard fate D6 has 2 pluses, 2 minuses, and a blank side.
Makes sense.
Okay. All right. So, and you can think of that as you know, maybe the plus is a claw and the minus is a
tail.
Harpoon.
Oh.
Okay. And I think the blank side is actually going to be like a shield, like a no result.
Okay.
Okay. So, and then the village that you're attacking is going to have a defense value, but it's not really a defense value. It's more of an attrition value. Okay.
Okay.
So when you go into to attack a village, you have a set number of attack dice that you're always going to roll. Okay. And let's say it's 5 attack dice. Okay. 5 mm-hmm. of these fate dice. And you roll those whatever the result is. So you have pluses, minuses, and blanks. Okay. Your dragon's attack power is the preset. Pluses, okay.
Mm-hmm.
For every plus that you roll, it tells you how many successful attacks you've made on the village, and that tells you how much gold you earn per attack. Okay, every minus that's on the dice is your dragon taking a hit. Whoops, I just bumped the microphone.
Freaked me out. I was like, what the heck is that noise?
Every minus that you get is the dragon taking a hit, taking damage. You know, so they harpooned mm-hmm. him or something, or they right. shot arrows at him, right? And then the attack or the defense value on the card that represents the village or the castle or whatever is not a value of how much damage they do, but it's a value of how long this battle is going to go on. So if the village has a defense value of 1, that means you're going to roll the dice one time and then the battle's over. But if it's a 5, you know, the castle's going to be 5, you're going to have to roll those dice 5 times.
Okay, that makes sense.
So how many rolls you're going to, how much time you as a dragon are going to have to spend attacking this village. And since you have to spend action points to do an attack, it's how much of your life are you going to spend attacking this village, devoting how much energy to attacking the village. And you're hoping then that your attacks are going to yield more gold than you will lose in that defense. And of course, you can stop at any time, and you can fly, you can flee the battle anytime you want, and just say cut your losses or whatever, and say I'm done with this, right? But if you see the battle through to the end, there is some final victory reward when you finally destroy the village or destroy the town or destroy the castle. And then you're just going to, in addition to the standard gold boost for every plus that you get, there's going to be a final bump bonus reward that you get. And the longer the battle goes on, the bigger that final reward will be. Okay, fair enough?
Makes sense.
All right. But so now getting a little fuzzier is every time you have a successful attack on a village where you destroy it, burn it to the ground, or maybe it's just every time you attack a village, period, whether you're successful or not, I want there to be some kind of a press your luck thing in there where it will, the first time you do it, you're going to then roll those dice again, maybe. And based on the result, it may or may not mean that a knight is going to attack you for vengeance, right?
That makes sense.
And every time you attack a village, it's going to be more likely that next roll will succeed. And I'm not sure how to structure that right now. But now then the knight is also going to have that, but the knight will have his own inherent minus value. So he's always going to do so much damage to you, minimum per turn. And he's going to have an attrition value. So it's going to go on so long. And you cannot flee a battle with a knight.
Right, because he's chasing you.
He's chasing you, right. He's pursuing you. So I'm not sure how to structure that press your luck concept. I'm not sure what kinds of upgrades you'll be able to install as your dragon. That's all that kind of card stuff I would have to work out. But then, yeah, again, you play until you run out of action points, or maybe until you max out your horde, or until you die. You know, if you reach the highest possible level of the horde, then I would say you're now a legendary dragon who has amassed a vast fortune that is known across the lands, and you're a legend. And whether you die or not at this point doesn't matter, because you're a legend among your people.
Right.
You know, and then for difficulty scaling in there, you know, for an easy game, maybe you start with your horde at 30 instead of 10, but right, for a hard game, you start at 10 or whatever, right. You know?
Yep. That makes sense.
So easy, good scaling in there. I think there's, you know, there's a town, or there's a village deck, there's a town deck, and there's a castle deck. And they're each more difficult, and there are variable difficulties within those decks, and you shuffle them up. You always know what kind of a place you're going to go raid. The knights are just shuffled up. You never know what's going to come up. And then there's also that event deck where you're going to occasionally, maybe you can take some action without spending action points, but then you're going to have to flip over an event card instead. Maybe you can spend action cards to regain life, or spend action points to regain gold, I mean. I don't know if it's a one-to-one, or maybe you can spend gold to regain action points that way, but it's, yeah.
That could be as easy as some event cards could be like, traveling caravan
of sure.
gold that you could go raid that would be like real easy, guaranteed win.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
But just, you have to spend action points on it.
Yeah, right. I think small settlements or villages or whatever, and little caravans and things, you could, at the most, those are going to be 2 rolls to defeat those. But if you're attacking a big fortified castle, it could be 6 rolls.
Right.
You know?
One thing that might be cool is with the knights, you have the ability to either ignore them and just let them keep plugging away at you until they die, right? Mm-hmm. Or you have the ability to face them head on, right? Which could have a greater risk of loss, but if you win, it could mean you don't take attrition for so long, right? So basically, mm-hmm. you could ignore the knight and let him keep stalking you, and having these little scuffles with him where you're losing points every turn. Sure. Or you could turn and face him and mm-hmm. take that bigger risk. So
yeah, that's true.
Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What
the biggest question I'm left with is, but how do dragons carry gold?
Well, dragons amass a hoard of gold and they go places and they steal it and they carry it back to their cave.
Like how?
That's what dragons do, Jason.
Yeah, but how do they do it?
That's what they do, Jason.
How do they carry it?
Dragons love gold.
Do they carry it in their mouth? Do they carry it with their little T-Rex arms?
They collect gold and they take it back to their cave and then they sleep on their pile of gold. That's what dragons do.
So you don't know how then?
Dragons collect gold, Jason.
I can't believe this never occurred to me before, but it really did. Like, and I'm just like, you've never seen the movie, like, you know, like some stupid dragon.
He bought a Timbuktu bag. They're really handy.
They are. Sling it over his shoulder.
Hey, don't worry about it.
I mean, a caravan, right? You just pick it up fly back and drop it and it smashes everywhere and there's gold everywhere. But anyways,
don't worry about it.
That sounds like good 2/3 of a solo game that'd be worth playing.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to get away from something that was deck driven or card driven and also something that was not, that has dice, because I think dice are important for some randomization, but it's not just directly related to, I need to do more damage than you, you know?
Right.
I liked that attrition approach to it.
Yeah, totally agree.
And then of course, I guess I didn't say, but the blank sides are just, you know, no result.
You did say that.
Maybe. Yeah. Oh, did I? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know what to call it. I mean, the obvious name is something like Dragon's Horde or something, but I'm sure there are 1,000 games called that or variations thereof. So I don't want to just say the Dragon's Horde.
Dragon Flame.
Nope. Rain of Fire.
Dragon Flame. It was a joke.
Go on.
Our good friend Matt Loomis has a game called Dragon.
Oh, does he? Okay. I figured that was a reference.
I think that was his first game that was published.
Okay. So. I figured that was a reference to a game that was already published, but
I was hoping I would say, and you'd be like, oh, that's good. Yeah. And then be like, no, can't have that.
Yeah. Okay. Rain of Fire is not bad. You know, I actually, before I went on that trip to Vegas, I tried to find a copy or find someplace to download Rain of Fire, because I haven't seen it since it first came out. Mm-hmm. So I saw it in theater.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since, and I was just curious to see it again, but I couldn't rent it anywhere.
I own it.
Do you?
You can borrow it.
I want to borrow that. I would like to see that again.
But it can't be like the A-Team. You can't borrow it for like 6 months, not watch it, and then not bring it back. Yeah, so, sure.
I did eventually watch that. It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
fun. I really dug Rain of Fire.
Did you?
Yeah,
I remember it being real stupid.
Oh, it's not good, but like the story is fun, right? I mean, Matthew McConaughey is Van Zandt, this like barbarian American with like this huge battle axe. I mean, it's just kind of cool. Yeah. Wait, right?
Okay, so I remember what I was disappointed is that there aren't any dragons in that movie about dragons, or there are very, very few dragons in that movie about dragons.
What?
Like, there's hardly any dragons in that movie.
There's several dragons in that movie.
Well, but like,
and then in the last act, there's like 500 dragons.
Yeah,
in that
but
movie.
Total screen time for all the dragons is like 8 minutes for that entire movie. I remember being disappointed about that.
Because it's about the people surviving.
I know, but I wanted to see the cool dragons. So. But maybe now that I'm older, I'll have a different opinion.
I mean, the kind of the MacGuffin for that movie is a little lame.
I don't remember that. I didn't know there was a MacGuffin.
It's that there's, I'm just going to spoil it. It's an old movie.
It's fine.
It's that there's only one male. There's one male. All the other dragons are females.
Okay.
And so if they kill the male, then the dragons are already dying off.
When did that come out? Was that like 2000, 2001, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere back there.
Yeah, yeah.
I really dug it when it came out.
Okay.
I mean, it again, not a great movie.
Yeah, right.
But an interesting movie. They've got the archangels, like the paratroopers that jump out and like net the dragons and stuff.
Just, yeah, that's vaguely familiar.
It's cool. Like, you know, the first time you get to see the American troops, like their little team work to take down a dragon, it's really cool.
Yeah.
So
instead of that, I downloaded The Last Knights.
Yeah.
From Netflix, because Netflix allows you to download some movies now, which is super cool. I like that a lot. I have never before seen a big budget Hollywood film that was more clearly tailored to the Chinese audience. It's like,
oh, really?
It's like this medieval fantasy world, and half the people in it are Chinese or Asian. I'm assuming they're Chinese. I don't know that for sure, but they were, And you know, there were some people speaking with Chinese accent, some people, speaking just full on American accent, some people British. Like they gave no craps at all about how people were talking. They had Clive Owen and Morgan Freeman in it because because they could afford to put some big names into it, you know, and a couple of B-list people that I don't even remember what their names are.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just super generic, and it wasn't a bad movie, but I don't know. It was just everything about it was like, we made a Hollywood movie to appeal to the Chinese market.
Right.
It was just funny. I mean, it was okay. I didn't hate watching it for an hour and a half, but.
All right.
Anyway, so we have some stuff to listen to here. That's enough of that pitch. Builders, if you have any thoughts or comments, I'd be very curious to hear them. I probably won't work on this really until I get past Unpub, because I got other stuff to focus on.
Right.
But yeah, I would like to explore a solo game and like actually explore it and just try and see something through.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So
got a couple of voicemails here. We're going to see what's up with those.
Okay. You haven't listened to these?
Nope.
No. Okay. All right. So, adventure time.
Could be a train wreck, guys. You don't know.
BDG. Neil Lexford, what's going on? I'm just driving around, listening to podcasts, enjoying myself. It's been a while. It's been a long while. I'm on episode 229, 230-ish, where you're talking about me driving around, listening to podcasts, which is not what normally happens, which is why I haven't been listening. But I was thinking today of a cool show, or at least I think it would be a good idea, which is if you guys, which will never happen because it's work, listen to episodes like 1, 5, 10, 15, 100, and then thought about how far you guys have come. I think you guys have come really far as a podcast from episode 1. But you don't take yourself too seriously, and you just know that you're really smart idiots, you know, like myself. So, anyways, random thought. Love the show. Keep it up. I may catch up one day. Later.
Oh, Len.
Oh, I still love the idea that all he does is just drive around all day.
He can say what he wants. We know that's what the case is.
Yeah, I mean, it is work, so it's not going to happen.
Right.
Right?
But
let's be honest.
Well, we did talk about doing that.
No, we did,
the 200th
actually,
episode was, the original plan was to listen to the first episode and then just tear it to shreds. And honestly, it had a long ways to go, but it wasn't nearly as bad as I remembered it being. So, you know, there was that.
I don't think I ever actually bothered to go back and listen to it.
I did. I think I told you not to, so.
Oh, maybe that was what. Yeah. No, we've talked about that kind of stuff as well. Well, like I said, we were looking back at old topics, and that's how we picked combat for today's show.
Right.
Because to try and, you know, and neither one of us listened to that episode before having this conversation today, but we have talked about that. That's been on our list of subjects, because we're approaching episode 250. We're, before we know it, could be hitting 300.
Yeah.
So,
which is crazy.
Yeah. So. I don't know. You know, hey, builders, if you, you know, if you have a perspective on change, we're totally interested to hear it. Voicemails are great for this kind of conversation. Yeah.
All right.
We got another one. Okay.
BG Linear Expert, what's up? On the road again. So listening to 230 still, and Rob just pitched this Halloween costume bargain bin game, and he ended it with, man, that was really hard. I picked out really hard ones. Yes, because if you recall, you picked them out so that Jason would pitch, and Jason picked his out, so you would. Of course they were hard. You were picking them up for each other, but then you forgot, and then you found them in your backpack. But if you want to know about that story, just listen to episode 230. Later.
He's right. He's talking about the meeples.
Oh yeah, the meeples.
Yeah,
I had no idea what he was talking about.
He's talking about the meeples.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
And that is pretty funny, because I think he was right. I think we were thinking about screwing each other over, as we usually do. Yeah. And so that would have been a good point.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Rock and roll.
Well, you know, it's still a little early, though. That was really quick. I think we have one more we could listen to tonight, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, so, I love listening to voicemails.
Yeah, so Len actually called us several times. So this one is from a different day, though. So,
ooh, okay.
All right,
different day, different Len.
Joshua J. Mills. Joshua J. Mills. I remembered, and it only took me 5 seconds. Later.
What?
So there was a voicemail where Len's yelling Joshua J. Mills at us. I don't know why anyone
was that a reference to another voicemail?
I'm
that we
actually
haven't listened.
Wondering.
I
if
must
that's
be.
So let's see what that is up with.
Okay. This is BDG featuring Lenier Wexford.
Yeah, there was another one on the same day. I bet this one was supposed to be first.
All right.
Hello. Lenier Wexford here. So driving around, and listening to the episode with Matt Loomis, and then also the one with the milkman himself can't recall name, Garage Gold. Wow, am I bad right now? Anyways, you're talking about Final Fantasies and how they were great. I was working on, did you guys ever want to play The Secret of Mana? The Secret of Mana. It was a Super NES game. And I think there was like a sequel or like a game that came out later that was similar to it by the same company called Chrono Trigger. Both were excellent games. If you haven't played them, maybe just, you know, Google it, check it out. Secret of Mana was the joint. Not the Final Fantasy wasn't, but I remember Secret of Mana just being like, whoa, what is this? Later.
Okay, that helps.
Super glad we got to play those out of order, right, though. That is awesome.
The Milkman. The Milkman himself. All right, next time I see Josh, I'm going to say, hey, it's the Milkman himself.
The Milkman himself.
Yeah. I never played Secret of Mana. I always wanted to play it when that game was out. I remember seeing it on store shelves and at the video store, but there's always some other game I wanted to rent. I did play Chrono Trigger because Chrono Trigger is BA. Chrono Trigger is BA. And if anybody disagrees, you're wrong.
I thought Chrono Trigger was pretty BA too.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger's right. There was a sequel to that called Chrono Cross that I never played that I heard was okay, but didn't really hold a candle to Chrono Trigger. I had friends in high school who played Chrono Trigger like, you know, 8 times over in a row because it had a bunch of different endings. I never did that. I think I played it once through, and then I started it a second time, and then was like, nah, let me move on. I'm bad about that. Nah. I don't play games multiple times. Secret of Mana, I'm sure I will never actually go back to play that, but it's something that I would be happy to do so, you know?
Yeah, the only game I've played through multiple times in any recent sort of time frame was... Resident Evil 4 on the Wii. Mm-hmm. And that was because that game was more fun the second time through because it kept getting easier and easier.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of fun. Like, you had better weapons. So it was kind of like, how easy is it to, like, this boss took me 20 minutes to kill. This time it took me 3 minutes.
Yeah, RE4, I've still never played it, but everybody says RE4 is a masterpiece and that it holds up.
It does, yeah. So I'm gonna. We got the Wii out again because my son has been liking to play the different games, and so some night when no one else is around, I need to play that because obviously it scared the crap out of the kids, bunch of zombies. Yeah. But in that movie, they're not zombies.
Oh no, they're infected. Yeah, infected with villagers something. Yeah.
In Italy.
But there's still plenty of monsters in it.
Oh yeah. It's wicked monsters, and they look like zombies, so they might as well be. Sometimes when you shoot them, their heads explode in these like big tentacles come out of their heads. So
okay, well, that makes sense.
Good times.
I are you in tune with all the Nintendo Switch stuff that's going on? Have you been paying attention to that?
With the Nintendo stuff?
Nintendo Switch.
The Switch. I heard the graphics are really bad or something.
No, I think that's wrong. Well, they're just not. It's, you know, Nintendo doesn't do
graphics.
They just don't do, you know, state of the art anymore. Right.
Because that's not their jam.
They haven't since, even the 64 was borderline, right?
So that was when they could still almost keep up.
Yeah.
And then after that, they were like, we're not
going to GameCube, they just stopped trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So Nintendo does experience, and they do systems that will complement their characters and their IPs.
Right. Switch looks interesting.
Yeah, it looks neat. I don't know. I won't buy one because I'm not a Nintendo guy anymore.
We've got the Wii, and I have a PlayStation 3, which I never use. So
yeah. So, but I think it looks neat. I don't know. Battery life on that thing, though. I'm told they had their big event a week or so ago. At this point, like 3 weeks ago, when builders are listening to this, and I think they said battery on life on that is like at best 4 hours when it's mobile, which is terrible. Maybe it was 6 hours, but still, that's not good.
6 hours is better than 4.
It's better, but still, you know?
If you could plug it in a car, it'd be all right.
Yeah.
You
know? Like, there are a lot of people, and this is not you and me, but there are a lot of people who, you know, have commutes and public transit, and their commute could easily be, you know, an hour to an hour and a half.
Right.
A lot of people in that situation, or you know, just kids, you know, on a road trip. They want to be able to play their games for a long time, so.
Right.
That seems like they might be missing something there, but. I don't know. Whatever. I haven't touched the thing. I'm only going based on what I've read online.
Right.
But anyway.
All right.
Neat idea. Okay, is that it?
That is it.
All right, builders. You are awesome. You're the best builders that ever builded. Yeah, that's it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us email to billinggamepodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is at podcastbtg. Jason at jayslinger. I'm at pulley_design. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Buildinggamepodcast.com. Buy our games. Connect to the things through that place. Like us and review us with the 5 stars. Jason, bring it on, man. What do you got?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lay it on me.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
I got nothing for you.
This is like the 6th time that I've done this, and you still have nothing.
Because all I ever think about is crappy stuff to say about things I don't want to talk about, so.
Well, it just... No little sweet nothing to whisper in the builder's ears to send them off to have a wonderful day or a wonderful evening.
Larfengar.
Beautiful.
All
good
right.
Night.
Good night. Yeah.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Old shows. Let's just, once we hit like 250, let's just start going back and redoing all the same old things all over again. You know, let's
we
just
talked about actually purposely doing that. We
yeah,
called but, this our first episode of doing that.
But I mean, no, let's just not say anything about it
and see if anyone notices.
See if anybody
we
knows.
Go through like the exact same order again.
Right. Yeah, and like even go back and like repitch the same games.
No, people would notice that.
You think okay?
There well, are some people that would notice that.
Well, then take the same mechanics and just change the themes. Maybe I'll do that sometime soon. I'll just go back and I won't say anything. I'll just pick an old game that I pitched in the first like 20 episodes.
You need to do that with wormholes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just put something on there. I'll come up with a new theme. I'll slap a new theme on. I'll give the exact same pitch and see if anybody notices. That'd be fun.